It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
In all our discussion of Luis Arraez, didn't even mention the fact that the strikeout streak ended. 141 plate appearances. Wasn't a bad at-bat at all, though. Fouled off a bunch of two-strike pitches, made Spencer Arrighetti work, drove up that pitch count. Ultimately, though, got him on the back foot breaking ball. And for the first time since early August, Luis Arraez struck out.
We just played that clip of Schilt talking about his knee, and AJ Casavell asked the question. He said, I have a couple of questions on Arraez. The second question was, it's kind of interesting when it makes news that a guy struck out, and that literally was a headline yesterday.
Well, you know what else is I thought about it this morning as I was scrubbing my body in the shower. I thought to myself, yeah, what a bummer that streak ended. And I thought again to myself, in previous years of being a Padres fan and covering the team, it would have been such a big deal because we would have been out of it. At this point, would have been all we had. They would have been selling tickets. Hey, come see Luis Arraez's non-strikeout streak. There would have been shirts and counters. It happened last night, and I went, bummer. Bummed for him. Also knew he was good for two more knocks, you know, that night. Like, it would have been all we had. And we have so much more this season, so much more ahead.
Arrighetti is a good young pitcher and had some good stuff for sure. But even though the Padres only scored three runs, wasn't necessarily a poor offensive performance. What are they, 13 hits?
Yep.
I mean, they were putting bat to ball. They hit two home runs. Jackson Merrill's solo shot is 24th of the year in the fourth inning, which looked like a no-doubter off the bat. And then Jackson admitted, and then I started worrying because I saw the center fielder going back and like, oh, he might have a play on this. He said, it's just at night at Petco Park, the ball just dies.
Better be damn sure.
It's close, too.
Yeah,
and it was a little closer than I think even Jackson thought, but it was over 410 feet, and he did get it over the fence.
Jerks and Profar, ye did not have to worry. When he hit that ball, that thing was a rocket. Rocket out of Petco Park, and he flipped his bat. I don't know. They took a picture of it, and it's out of the frame. That's how high he flipped his bat. It was elite, and what a great night for him. 4-for-4 for Jerkson. Manny Machado getting the team on the board right out of the chute. I mean, it was just fantastic. I loved an early Xander Bogaerts at bat, Ben. I think it was a 10-pitch AB off Arrighetti, seeing every pitch, setting the guy up behind him to see every single pitch in his arsenal, too. If Bogey had gone down swinging, it was still a great AB. You drive the pitch count up. You give the guy on deck a chance to see this is what he's going with. This is what it looks like. Again, team baseball up and down the lineup all night. I just can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, baseball is weird. Just in contrast, the Padres pounded out 13 hits with two home runs and scored three runs. The Dodgers only got four hits yesterday.
Nuts.
One was a homer. They got nine runs on four hits. A lot of it's timing and you know how your rallies play out, but they did beat the Braves. I was actually, I think we discussed this yesterday, I was cheering for the Braves in that game, hoping the Padres could lower their gap from first place in the NL West. So they're still 3.5 games back of the Dodgers in the NL West. We had the long discussion of magic numbers. Whatever it is, Padres are 2.5 games up now on the Diamondbacks, who lost to the Rockies.
Wowzers.
That was a bit of a surprise. Thank you very much, Bud Black.
Thank you, buddy.
Fell behind 2-0 in the first inning on a Ketel Marte home run. And I'm going, oh, this is going to be a rout. The Diamondbacks score like 14 in their sleep in this game. Never scored again against Colorado's bullpen day.
It's unreal.
And the Rockies rallied, tied it, won it on a throwing error in the bottom of the ninth inning for a fairly shocking 3-2 result that gives the Padres now a 2.5 game cushion for that first wild card spot and home field advantage in the wild card round. Mets did win. They were losing to the Nationals most of the day, and they rallied one in the eighth and one in the tenth on a Starling Marte walk-off single to beat the Nats 2-1. So they're now tied again with the Braves for the last wild card spot, but 4.5 games behind the Padres, correct? Or no, they're 3.5 and the Braves are 4.5.
And
but there's some separation now.
When's the Mets Braves series? Because that
last three.
Yeah. Oh my God. Holy smokes. Padres Diamondbacks for the last three. I mean, look, the schedule makers, they didn't do the Padres any favors by scheduling the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks in the last six games of the season. I saw the Dodgers last six games are, I think, pretty cupcakey, except for, no, they play us. But then they have
Marlins,
like,
Rockies, twice.
Marlins, Rockies.
Padres, Rockies.
Yeah. Mm. Just setting it up for them.
But, no, it's the second-to-last series second is the Mets last. And Braves. It's
okay.
The Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday of next week. And then they finish with, the Braves finish with Kansas City.
But holy cow.
For their last three.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming down to the wire, and this is as fun as it gets.
There was one narrative-busting moment in the game last night I want to talk about. Before that, I want to open the phone lines for Take on Woods. I had a winner yesterday, a chance to qualify in our musical trivia challenge for a trip for two to Las Vegas, two nights at the Wynn or the Encore, and tickets to their show, Awakening, if you want to call in now. Phone lines are open, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. Play our game here in a couple of minutes. The narrative buster, of course, was our long discussion yesterday about Robert Suarez in the ninth inning. And I'm sure everybody, from Mike Schilt to Robert Suarez on down, had a nice smile when they saw him come in and pitch a 1-2-3 ninth.
Eight pitches.
Very efficient final inning.
Hell of a nice play, by the way, by Donovan Solano at first base.
And Robert Suarez. Yeah.
For getting there, catching it on the fly after a lollipop toss from Donovan. Timed it out perfectly. One pitch, one out. I don't know about you guys, but at that point, when we one pitch, one out, I felt pretty damn good about it from there on out. And I think that's why you can't knee jerk every time a closer blows a save. He's got that in him. You keep rolling right now. I mean, the guy that everybody wanted in so badly was Tanner Scott, and he had probably the worst inning for the guys out of the bullpen. But Jason Adam continues to be incredible, and ass delivered last night, as ass always does.
I'm sure Mike Schilt was at least quietly nodding, like after he said yesterday or the day before yesterday, hey, if we have a one-run lead,
I feel comfortable
going back to Suarez. Well, it was a two-run lead thanks to Jurickson and Profar, but he was coming in with a one-run lead, had Profar not homered in the bottom of the eighth inning, and Suarez rewarded his skipper's faith with a very solid inning and his 33rd save of the season. Would be nice to see him, you know, regain some of that form and a little confidence going into the postseason, because there's going to be a moment like there was in 2022 where he's going to have to face a batter like a Bryce Harper, you know, a Kyle Schwarber, someone nasty on nasty with a game on the line at some point in the postseason. You can just almost guarantee that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a high leverage guy. Schulte said this yesterday. High leverage guys are going to face high leverage situations. So I honestly think, Ben, if we got it, let's just play it forward. If it's Philly and they got Schwarber, Turner, and Harper, you're going to see Tanner Scott.
I would think.
You'd be insane not to. No matter when that comes up, they know when it's coming up. They've got the lineup right there. They know exactly what they need to do. Yeah, man.
But what if it's, you know, Turner, Harper, and then who's after that? Castellanos?
Yeah. I'll take Tanner Scott, too.
You never know how exactly it's going to work out, what the minimum three changes everything.
That's true. The minimum three is a nightmare.
In the old days, you might
take one,
and just that's the inning. You know, we got to get their big guys, and we're going to empty our best guys to make sure we get through that inning. You can't do that anymore.
You go Adam, Scott, Suarez. Who cares? Trying to win a game here. I think they're going to play matchups, I think, down the road, but it was really nice to see. It was really, really nice to see Bobby Fastballs coming and get the job done. No sweat at all.
Don't forget, our conversation with Michael King is coming up at 7:35. Really fun one we had in the dugout before the game yesterday. Right now, though, we got some contestants on the line. Right. Let's get to it. Time to take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
All right, Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Is this Scott?
It is.
Scott, you are a contestant today. Good luck. If you don't know the rules, here they are once again. Five questions. You go first. Woods goes second. If you beat or tie him, we'll put you into the drawing for the trip to the Encore or Wynn Las Vegas two nights and the tickets to Awakening, their new show. Tickets on sale at awakening.com. And to give you the advantage, you get to pick the category and keep Woods in the dark. Your choices today, Scott, an iffy category, five with the word if. Below the Waist, five songs that include a lower half body part in the title. And our new category, Feeling a Certain Way, the word feeling appearing in all five song titles. So, an iffy category, Below the Waist or Feeling a Certain Way. Scott, what do you feel lucky about?
I don't feel lucky about any of them, but I'll go with the last one, Feeling a Certain Way.
All right, this category should have you feeling a certain way about the word feeling, which appears in all five song titles. You'll have 60 seconds. If you don't know an answer, you can pass. We'll come back to it if there's time remaining. First question's the two-second song. Paulie, going to play you a little clip. You need to give me the title with the word feeling and the artist to score that point. Two-parter. Scott, are you ready to play?
Sure.
All right. Woods in isolation. He will be back momentarily. You can see him through the glass. There is no sound out there in our YouTube stream. 60 seconds on the clock. Scott, the category Feeling a Certain Way. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
Ooga, shaka, ooga, 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 shaka, ooga, ooga.
I just got this feeling, and I don't know who that is.
All right, let's move on. Now a classic rock staple, which debut single by the band Boston features the lyrics, I closed my eyes and I slipped away.
Feeling it.
Incorrect. Which 1984 power ballad was the second number one hit for REO Speedwagon following 1980's Keep On Loving You?
Oh, what is that? I'm not sure.
Pass. All right. I like the way your sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown is the first line of which Eagles classic?
Hotel California.
Incorrect. Which 2011 hit by rapper Flo Rida samples the Etta James classic Something's Got a Hold on Me?
Oh, good God.
That's a shutout today for Scott.
I don't think that's going
to No, that's not going to hold up. I will just leave the answers twisting in the wind so everyone can play a second time here as Woods plays his game. The only difference is Woods doesn't get the category. See if he figures this one out pretty quickly. Let's put 60 seconds back on the clock. Woods, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Scott.
Ooga, shaka, ooga, 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 shaka, ooga, ooga.
I can't fight. I'm so spun. Tom Jones. All right, pass.
Now a classic rock staple, which debut single by the band Boston features the lyrics, I closed my eyes and I slipped away.
More than a feeling.
Correct. Which 1984 power ballad was the second number one hit for REO Speedwagon following 1980?
I can't fight this feeling.
Correct. I like the way your sparkling earrings lay against your skin so
peaceful,
brown.
Peaceful, easy feeling.
Correct. Which 2011 hit by rapper Flo Rida samples the Etta James classic Something's Got a Hold on Me.
Are you going to let me get the first one?
Yeah, go back to it if you'd like.
Ooga, shaka, ooga, 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 shaka, ooga.
Hooked on a feeling. It's Engelbert Humperdinck.
No, good guess, though. So. Now a classic rock staple, which debut single by the band Boston.
I've got that one already.
Oh, you got that
yes,
one? Then you got
the
all the,
Flo Rida. I need Flo Rida.
It's a Flo Rida. Etta James classic something.
Taint
you
feeling.
Won. Three to nothing.
Oh, thank God.
Feeling
we had a zero?
Way, yeah. That was
I needed it.
On a feeling by Blue Swede.
Blue Swede.
And Good Feeling is the
I
name of the...
This feeling.
Sounds just like Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck.
Deep inside.
I love More Than a Feeling, though. What a jam. So the guy blanked, huh?
Yeah. It was a tough one today. Yeah. For him. Sorry, Scott. Thanks for playing. Woods needs a confidence-building win, though.
Scott, thank you for that confidence-building win.
heading toward the playoffs, he needs to build up a little confidence. He clinched a long time ago, so now he's just trying to
smooth
keep his
out.
Form going into October
Lord.
At this point.
Sorry about that, buddy.
No worries. All right, we've got Don't Do This coming up next, and a little controversy with the ninth inning home run that Robert Suarez gave up 2 days ago to Elliot Ramos that popped up.
I want to talk about Kayak Dave in San Francisco. I read an article yesterday and I went, somebody needs to take this guy and sit him down and have a conversation with him. He's more petulant than my six-year-old, and that's pretty petulant.
I don't know if this surprised anyone necessarily. He's a guy in a kayak every single game of the season looking for home run balls. What did you expect?
I expected better than this.
All right.
To be honest, I did.
Don't Do This is coming up next after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
So that voice you hear in our Don't Do This open is Hannah Nancaro Woods.
Indeed.
Asking everybody to be better out there.
No, just me.
Just you?
Yeah.
Well, that was just for you.
Don't do this.
Right.
Hannah, of course, was the subject of some non-asked for online attention yesterday. We talked about it in our open today.
Talked about it yesterday.
We talked about it yesterday as well. And that is also the subject of my first story on Don't Do This today. Playing the role of Hannah in this story is UConn women's basketball star Paige Beckers, who was how bad does online harassment have to get to the point where you actually go and arrest the person?
Wow.
Because that's what happened in this case. So a man in Oregon, all the way on the other side of the country from Connecticut, is being held on $100,000 bond because he just relentlessly stalked Paige Beckers. And I don't want to make too fun of him, because this guy is obviously mentally not well. Robert Cole Parmalee of Grants Pass, Oregon, 40 years old, was so obsessed with her that UConn's communication department became aware of Parmalee in June after they received emails that were described by campus police as rambling. Police said Parmalee's emails claimed he was a member of the royal family and wanted to marry a member of the women's basketball team. His social media posts contained dozens of references to Beckers, including a post of a fake wedding invitation and multiple photos of Parmalee with what appears to be a diamond engagement ring. He also made posts that police officers describe as threatening to Becker's friends and family. One post on his TikTok account read, "And if I cannot live with a woman of my choosing, Beckers, then I will choose to die, and I will choose to take all of you that oppose me, oppose us to hell, and return king."
Bro, come on, man.
This guy is definitely on a different planet, but he has been arrested. And hopefully that will end the stalking of Paige Beckers.
I can't even, you know, I've got two boys. And many of you out there have daughters. And I honestly don't know how you do it. And it's my responsibility to raise two boys that don't do that. If you find a woman that you find attractive, and you may even shoot your shot, and it doesn't work out, it ends. It's got to end right there. It's got to be over. And obviously, you know, again, obviously this guy's mentally ill. But you cannot run the risk of letting this guy out again. This woman should not have to live looking over her shoulder the rest of her life.
At least he's on the other side of the country, but that's obviously
still,
not a guarantee.
When has that stopped anybody from doing anything? You know, we hear these stories all the time. Put this guy under the jail at this point. For real. Like, you just can't. You see these stories come out all the time. Oh, yeah, cops actually picked him up for stalking.
Oh, wait. He did fly to Hartford.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't even see that part. Yeah, they picked him up near the airport when they found him walking along a highway.
Forget it.
On his way to go see her.
Forget it.
That's even worse.
Well, good for the cops for getting him in the nick of time, but God only knows what would happen. So the punishments for these things need to be as harsh as can possibly be. Now, this is obviously a little bit more of a lighthearted story compared to that, but we all know about Dave, McCovey Cove Dave. Dave Edlund is his name.
I've seen him. I didn't really know about him.
Well, he's the guy.
I've seen him a million times.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's been out there for 20 years catching balls that go into the water. All right, good bit.
Caught a lot of historic Barry Bonds home runs.
The waterborne Zach Hample, as somebody called him in the in the chat this morning. But what struck me as interesting were his comments yesterday. We know that Elliot Ramos hit that first right-handed Cove shot. It's never happened before. Well, McCovey Cove Dave got it, and they went to talk to him at SF Gate. They went and said, "Hey, wow, a pretty big deal. This is one you wanted bad." And it was his comments, Benny, that really struck me. He was talking about himself, and he says, "Look, I enjoy being well known, getting a lot of love. I used to wear a Dave button when I was like 4 years old, so definitely I love being recognized. I feel like I've earned it." Earning it is a big thing for McCovey Cove Dave, because he said he's had certain players over the years, guys like Pablo Sandoval, Brandon Belt, Hunter Pence, that he might reach out to see if they want any of their home runs back, and he would give them to them in a second for free, no negotiation, because they earned it. He said, "Elliot, this is his beginning season, whatever that is, and I hope he has a fantastic career. He could get this ball, but he has to earn it. He has to play 10 years for the Giants and become deeply loved. And when I pass away, then yeah." And he says, "If Hunter Pence had 10 balls, I'd be willing to give all 10, because it's Hunter Pence. He's given so much to baseball fans. He's earned it. Elliot hasn't earned it yet." He said, "No, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Elliot Ramos, but he has to earn it to get this ball back from me." And I thought it was the way that a lot of his stuff was phrased, I went, man, this guy really thinks pretty highly of himself. But he said, "I spent 20 years, and this is one of the balls I've been trying to get for 20 years, to immediately think I have to hand it back to the player. I don't agree with that. It's not right. It's my ball. I earned it,
oh my
and
God.
I can do whatever I want with it." I heard that last night from Bo, 6 years old.
Six years old.
Well, what do you expect? The guy spends how many hours, would you say,
loads,
on the water?
Loads of hours.
Days of his life just sitting out there.
You know how many, 81 games a year.
You know he doesn't do it for
you,
all. He's
you know how many all. Splashdown home runs are hit? About an average of 4 a year.
Yeah. It's not a lot.
And he doesn't get all of them, that's for sure. I mean, you know. How many does he maybe get one a year? For all the time that he puts in?
He just got one recently. Just in the news recently.
He did.
That was a big deal. He didn't get the parking space he wanted from the Giants, so he kept that ball as well.
Who was the guy? We just had a story a couple weeks ago where he I don't remember what team or who hit something, but he was like, I want a job with the team.
That was him. That was this whole thing. Yes, it's McCovey Cove Dave. So Giants, the hardcore Giants fans that I follow, like Andrew Baggerly, who I love, is a brilliant, brilliant writer, was like, you're a grifter, dude. It's an annoying bit and you're a grifter. Another guy that's really good, Garlic Fry Rye is his name. I follow him. He's a good Giants fan. He's like, dude, if you're a Giants fan, shouldn't you want to make a young rookie, like, that's his ball. Dude, trade it for a bat and a jersey, whatever. Call it a day. Like, no problem with that. But, yeah, man, I think the guy wants the clout more than the actual ball itself. It's a weird comment. It's a weird, weird way to live.
Can I add, like, a light don't do yes. this story? I don't know who else caught this yesterday. I'm watching the Padres game, and whatever inning it was that we had the send, and Luis Arraez gets caught up at home plate, twists the knee.
I saw this.
And it was tough. You know, he's sitting there for a few minutes, and Ben Frazier went out there to check on him. And you see Arraez eventually walk off under his own power, and he's kind of hobbling towards the dugout. And do this is on to the Petco Park music maker machine.
Yes.
I don't think this was intentional. But maybe
was it not pre-programmed, right?
Like, I don't think it's pre-programmed, but maybe just take into account the situation, what's going on.
I know what you're talking about.
In the background of the game, Don and Tony just were silent for a second as you see Arraez kind of hobbling his way over to the dugout, and I hear in the background at the stadium,
everybody clap your hands. Oh.
He's hobbling off the field.
Trying to get the crowd riled up for the next upcoming at-bat. And I go, bad timing.
Maybe it's clap your hands because he's up and walking off the field. But
everybody clap your hands.
He's like, laying there writhing in pain. It's great. It's great.
I mean, it's a totally different clap when you clap for someone who's coming off. Injured. It's,
yeah.
Not yet.
Everybody clap your hands.
It's a different clap. There's a different cadence to the, well, we're sorry you're hurt. I hope you're okay clap.
I looked around. I was like, I just heard that, right?
It's a game awareness or whatever. Like, hey, man, listen, that guy's up there. He's got a job to do. And they're like, hey, get this crowd back into it right now. You know, let's, maybe they didn't see what they thought they saw. Okay? And if we get them fired up, they're just going to forget. But he may be hurt. So, it was great, man. It was great.
In-game entertainment is a lot about distraction. All right, Paulie's got a doo-doo this story for us as well.
DD Mega Doo-Doo.
Congratulations. Shout out SD. Congratulations to San Diego. I was reading this morning. There was a poll put out of the rudest and most polite cities in all of America. Do you think San Diego fell on the rude or the polite?
Well, it's do this, so I'm assuming it wasn't polite. The rudest city in America.
Yeah. They are the number two. We are the number two most polite city in America.
Who do we have to pass?
On number one. I'll tell you who you passed.
Kansas City.
Columbus, Ohio is number three. Okay. Kansas City is number four. Uh-huh. Milwaukee, Indianapolis. San Jose.
See that.
Raleigh, North Carolina. And Oklahoma City.
Okay, I can see all those.
Those are behind. Yes. So who is number one?
Friendliest? All right, give me big or little? Or mid?
Pretty big.
Pretty big city?
St. Louis.
No.
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 Chicago.
No.
Minneapolis.
Midwestern, definitely.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah, how are you? Hey.
Don't you know?
Yeah, how are you?
What about welcome.
I brought you a casserole.
Cities? The rudest cities.
New York.
What do we got?
Counting down quickly from 10 to 1. Charlotte, Long Beach, Las Vegas, Memphis, Boston, Oakland, Louisville. Tampa, Philadelphia, and Miami. Which
no New York.
A little surprising.
All right. Miami, the rudest city.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is all very scientific.
Yeah, very scientific.
Very, very, very scientific.
Yeah. What's one guy walking around the streets of all these cities? Hey, how you doing? Oh, all right. Yeah, I will go F myself. Thanks.
Uber driver is kind of rude to me in Miami, so they're number one.
Yeah, that's don't and do this for a Tuesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, when we come back, Paulie Woods and I went down to Petco Park yesterday with a chance to talk to Michael King about his first season with the Padres and the new King of the Hill Foundation that he's getting started. And it's so much more than just a double entendre. He's got real reasons behind what he's doing and why he's starting this up. It's fascinating, and you will hear from Padres pitcher Michael King, happens to be tonight's starting pitcher as well, coming up next year on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. You might be wondering, if you listen to Ben and Woods long enough, that they sure talk a lot of Padres. They have Mike Shildt on every Friday, but you don't hear that many players on the show. Why is that? Do Ben and Woods have something against putting players on the program? No. It couldn't be further from the truth.
I would take a player every day.
But the reality is, when baseball teams play night games, it can sometimes be hard to schedule morning interviews live. And, for instance, we wanted to talk to Michael King, especially with the announcement that he's starting a new foundation. Kind of, it was one of those times when players actually want to get their message out. They want to be interviewed, so they're looking for it. So this is a perfect chance to catch up with him. We talked to him at spring training, haven't had a chance to interview him since. So we extended the invitation. What happened, Woods?
So Paulie sent out the, reached out to PR and said, hey, we'd love to have him on, help him promote his new foundation, King of the Hill. And they said, oh, yeah, he's absolutely loves you guys. No problem. Okay, great. Well, what, 9:30? Is there a chance you guys could come down to the ballpark?
Sure.
What, any particular reason? Yeah. He doesn't get up till after your show's over. And I went, oh, all right. So we go down there yesterday, and we happen to run into Michael King as we're walking in the door. And he goes, dude, thank you guys so much for coming. And I said, yeah, we'll see you at 3:45 and record this thing and get you on your way. And he goes, great, great. He goes, I just got to tell you, man, I feel like a diva. And I said, oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to get you forward in the interview. So here we go.
All right. So you will hear our interview with Michael King, who, gets a nice amount of beauty rest, as any athlete should, peak condition of their bodies. But was more than happy to sit down with us in the dugout at Petco Park yesterday. You'll hear that interview right after traffic.
We're just going to actually get right to it.
Oh, we're just going to get right to it after 97.3 The Fan. Catching up with Padres pitcher Michael King in the Padres dugout, about to launch the King of the Hill Foundation. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, it's great to see you again.
Yeah, of course. I think it's been since spring training, right?
It has been. It's been a while. I have one question for you. This is where I'd like to start today. What kind of grown man doesn't get out of bed until after 10 a.m.? Michael?
I knew this was coming. Yes, I was not able to do the interview this morning. I don't go to bed until pretty late, so I need my beauty sleep, and it sometimes runs me after 10 a.m.
Well, it seems to be working for you. You're looking good and fresh and fantastic.
So it was 6.5 months ago that we first met you in the back patio at Peoria. It was a great conversation. As you look back now, what stands out to you from the journey from then to where you and the team are right now?
Honestly, I think it's all the relationships that I've developed. You got me when I honestly didn't know anybody in the locker room. I walked into a spring training locker room that was filled with big leaguers, minor leaguers, guys that I didn't know were going to be on the team or not. And now I feel like we have this extreme brotherhood. And I think it shows on the field. I think we're all fighting with each other, and it makes it for a lot better product out there, but also a much more fun experience for me and on this team.
You know, chemistry is something I think that every, you know, radio show, every team needs to have. It's not something that can be faked. It's just not. You can try to force the issue a little bit. Was there a moment for you this season where you kind of looked around and went, oh, yeah, this is the real deal. We are actually all together.
I think it's been a culmination of all the comeback wins. And obviously I wasn't here last year. I got asked so many times what happened last year and what's different from last year to this year, and obviously I can't speak to what happened last year, but if you just look at the numbers, we were really bad in one run games, we were really bad in extra inning games, and I think that those moments, I don't know, this is the chicken or the egg conversation, I don't know if those moments make us closer as a team, or if because we were already close, those moments become easier and now you're fighting for your brother next to you instead of just going out there and playing a baseball game. So I think those are the moments that all think back on as to how I got closer, guys that were times where guys had my back, times where a pitcher comes in and just shuts the door down in the eighth inning, and we come back and win the game. So it's been a culmination of all that, and like I said, it's been very exciting.
For you personally, early in the season, there were some good moments, also some like trouble with the home run ball, and then all of a sudden it just seemed like the hard contact off you stopped. Is there something that you felt like changed or clicked in like a month and a half, 2 months into the season?
I definitely think my command got better. I came out in my first start, walk seven against the Giants, and I think that it wasn't as much a confidence thing as it was I needed to just attack with my stuff in the zone, and then I would be able to limit hard contact, because even if I was still in the middle of the plate, I was able to throw all of my pitches for strikes. In those first few starts, couple months, I was 2-0 to like their best hitter, and then obviously I have to now throw a cookie in the middle of the plate, and me hoping that it's just 110 mile an hour line drive at somebody ended up being a home run. So I think that me getting ahead of counts and being more confident in all of my pitches at any point in the middle heart of the plate will play better than being 2-0, 3-1.
Talking to a Padres pitcher, Michael King, here on Ben and Woods this morning. And listen, I know you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but you guys are planning and preparing for the playoffs. How exciting is that, just to know, hey man, we got a 97% chance of getting in there, going to be facing some really, really good teams. You're going to get your shot to go out there and compete against the very best and try to win a World Series ring.
It's the best. I mean, that's what you play baseball for. You got to win the last game of the season. So I think that we have been on this stretch for a long time. I also think that we've had a lot of really good teams come in here, but also coming in these last 2 weeks, and I think it'll really prepare us for playoffs. I've never started a playoff game, so it's a huge dream of mine. I can't wait to do it. I think that we have the full makeup in terms of all the guys on our team, and you can definitely feel the atmosphere, whether it be the fans that are here or just the attention to detail that we're really putting into these last 2 weeks because of
it. And how much, like, every pitcher, every starting pitcher just wants to go as long as he can, and sometimes you run out of gas, but you're never going to let anybody know you're running out of gas. It's got to be a pretty good feeling to know, if I don't have my exact best stuff tonight, look who's coming in behind me to maybe bail me out or maybe secure me a dub today.
Absolutely. Yes, I want to go complete game every time I go out there. I also hate getting pulled from games, and
we know. We've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it.
You seem really friendly at every other time I've ever seen you, except around except the sixth inning, when all of a sudden you look really mad most of the time.
So I've already had conversations with Schulte where I have to apologize after because of my emotions in the moment. I hope that Schulte respects that, but so
he does.
but the main thing is, I think it happened in, I don't know if it was my last start or the start before, Ruben came out, it was the sixth inning, and he told me to empty the tank. And that to me was a vote of confidence, saying, we still want you to finish the sixth inning. But also, like, we want you to give us everything you have for this batter or the next batter or as much as you can go. And it doesn't matter if you leave bases loaded, no outs, we're going to bring in the horses and they're going to just shut it down for us. So that helps in those situations when we're leading, but also when you give up a couple runs in the first couple innings, knowing that if you keep it within a manageable distance, every single one of those guys in the pen is going to put up a zero, and with the offense that we're putting out there, they're going to be able to come back. And it's happened so many times, and you can totally feel that we're never out of a game.
For these last 2 weeks of the season, obviously there's things the Padres can control, things they can't control on the out-of-town scoreboard. Does it matter that much? I mean, you want to make the playoffs, obviously, but securing home field advantage, trying to chase down the Dodgers, like what level of importance is kind of that ranked in the Padres clubhouse right now?
I think that everybody like has it in the back of their head. Everybody knows that all we can do is go out there and win every game that we play. But like, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't watching all the Dodgers games, all the Diamondbacks games, all the Mets games, and rooting for the other team. But not only that, I feel like watching all the Diamondbacks games is giving me a huge insight into their approach, knowing that we could be having them in the first round of the playoffs, knowing that we could have whoever, Mets, Braves, we're watching all those games. And I think it ends up being something for us to just know what they're doing, how they're approaching these games, how they're approaching hitters, how I can approach their hitters. And it ends up being a positive for us, regardless of outcome of their game.
I don't know if Mike Schultz discussed any of this with you, but when the postseason comes and there's, you know, maybe a three-game series, are you prepared for whatever may happen in terms of role that they need you to pitch in?
Yeah, none of it has been fully discussed. And, of course, I mean, obviously I was a reliever. I obviously would love to start as many games as possible. I always joke to Ruben that I want to go 1-4-7 of the World Series. But, yeah, whatever they need me to do in the playoffs, it's all hands on deck. So we're just going to win as many games as possible when it gets that and throw whoever needs to be thrown.
I'll just counter that with how about just 1-4? Just 1-4, and then we'll just call it a day. No game sevens. I don't know that, frankly, I don't know that anybody in this city's prepared for a game seven of a World Series. Padres pitcher Michael King joins us. Tell us a little bit about King of the Hill and what inspired you to get this thing started and what people can do.
Yeah, so I'll try to condense the story a little bit. I started dating my wife, who was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. She was diagnosed at 23 years old. We didn't start dating until after that. But her story is crazy. So her mom has type 1 diabetes, her cousin has type 1 diabetes, her aunt has type 1 diabetes, all on her mom's side of the family. And her dad has been one of my biggest inspirations in terms of philanthropy. He was the president of the board for now Breakthrough T1D in New York. He has run countless marathons in support of type 1 diabetes. And Sheila said, I want to run one with my dad for my mom. This is pre-diagnosis. And while she was training for the marathon, she had a hip injury. She was like months into her training and she's already run her 20 miler. And she's like, I'm not going to not run this marathon. So the doctor gave her a cortisone shot in her hip. Didn't take. So like a week later, got another cortisone shot in her hip. She was okay. Well enough to run. She said it was a really painful race, but she finished. And 6 months later, she got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. There's no science to back this, but a lot of doctors have said, if you are genetically predisposed to the disease, that there can be something that sparks it in you. Steroid is one of them that could be. Her mom was diagnosed at 20. She had some viral infection when she was in college and then got diabetes right after. So obviously the main focus of all diabetes research foundations is to find a cure, but we want to really specify in the genetically predisposed, seeing if there's a way to delay it, seeing if there's a way to prevent the full onset of diabetes. There's now ways to test for four different antibodies, and if you have all four, it's at basically 100% chance you're going to get it in your lifetime. There's a medication that's out there, a drug that you can take once you start showing symptoms with all four antibodies that'll delay it by 2 years. And when I asked Sheila about it, I was like, it's only 2 years. Like, why is that necessary? And she was like, you know what it would be, or how much she would enjoy having two more years of normal life. Then she's thinking about our kids, and if our kids are genetically predisposed and they can get two more years of normal life and two more years of research and development, it'd be huge. There could be a cure in those 2 years. So our main goal is to get as many people screened as possible to see if they're genetically predisposed, but then it's going into research and clinical trials and that kind of thing to see if we can prevent that.
That's awesome.
And I want to personally thank you for this. So much isn't known about type 1. We don't have a family history of it, but my son at age 14, out of the blue, started to lose weight. We didn't know why, and we almost lost him. And eventually he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. He wasn't producing any insulin in his body anymore. And he's been fully insulin dependent now on his own, has to inject himself after every meal. But there's so much that's not known about this and so much research that can still be done. So just as Wood said, what for the public, if they want to kind of support King of the Hill, what are you kind of looking for in these early stages?
We're just launching. We're doing our actual launch event on Thursday. And we have kingofthehillfoundation.org. There's a place to donate there. And then on Instagram, we're King of the Hill Foundation. But the main thing that we're going for now is funds to right now, it's going to be give to different hospitals and companies that are located in San Diego, and that's another reason why we wanted to launch it. It's a little bit faster than we wanted to, but once we got out to San Diego, we realized the type 1 community here. Dexcom's one of our sponsors. I'm sure is your son on the CGM. So Dexcom's here, Tandem's here, Rady's Children's Hospital, UCSD. We've been in touch with so many different people here that we know we can help impact. And so that's where all of this initial fundraising is going to go to. We do have an announcement in terms of where it specifically will be on our launch event, so I'll save it for then. But we're very excited to be a part of this community and really feel the love from the community so far.
You are the king of the hill. The hill is the Mound Woods.
I know exactly what it means.
A double entendre in there.
So Sheila's maiden name is Hill.
Oh, come on.
Wow.
And you love the TV show, too.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
Michael, thank you so much. Good luck the rest of the season, and hopefully in the postseason. It was great to catch up with you again.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
What great stuff, Michael King. I mean, already respected the heck out of that guy, but even more so. Now, we finished the interview, but there's a little more to the story, as there always is. So hang on.
Strap in, buddy.
We'll be right back. Hour number three of Ben and Woods next year on 97.3 The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.